The following message is copyrighted by Westminster Theological Seminary. Duplication, distribution, or other use of all or any part of this message is not permitted without prior written consent. Please direct your inquiries to communications@wts.edu. For all other information, please visit the main website at www.wts.edu.
In this series, we're talking about what Christ is continuing to do for the church, primarily what he's doing to make relationships possible. In our last lesson, we saw that boldness is something that's possible because of Christ's grace. And now we want to talk about a second qualification or requirement for relationship, and that is understanding. There are a number of verses that I want to draw your attention to for this, but we'll begin with 1 Peter chapter 3. Verses 7 and 8. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 7 and 8. Paul says, "You husbands, likewise, live with your wives in an understanding way." Now, the word he uses there means knowledge. You must know your wife. Well, I don't want to say too much about this because I want to move on to something else, but it strikes me that knowing your wife is an important thing for husbands if their prayers are not going to be hindered. Do you see how Peter ends verse 7? He says, "You live with her as with a weaker vessel, since she is a woman, and grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered." Peter says you've got to know your wives so that you can live with her, but also so that your spiritual life is not affected. Your prayers will be hindered. Your ability to grow spiritually will be hindered if you do not know your wives. Now, some of you men are thinking, who can know a woman? Well, Peter says they're not only knowable, it's imperative that you know them. You must know them as something precious, as something valuable. Now, again, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time with this, but you men, I want to challenge you, do you know your wives? Do you study them? Do you study your wife as carefully as you study your golf game? Do you study your wife as carefully as you study your assignments if you're in school? I'm convinced that some seminary students know Hebrew better than they know their wives. Now, that's not saying a whole lot because seminary students don't often know Hebrew very well. But they spend more time studying their Hebrew than they do their wives. Okay. Now, this is an aside. This is free. This has nothing to do with what we're going to go on and talk about. But you men, I want to give you an assignment. I want you to study your wives. I want you to research your wife. I want you to spend a week doing nothing but taking notes about what you're learning about your wife. Okay. What kinds of things make her happy? What kinds of things does she get excited about? What kinds of things make her unhappy? What does she get upset about? Now, you spend a week studying her. Now, at the end of the week, you sit down with your wife and you say, "Now, honey," or whatever you call her, "I've been studying you for a week and I've reached some conclusions. Now, I want to share with you what those conclusions are." And you tell her. And then she'll tell you if you've got it or not. Maybe you've missed it. Okay, you listen. Then you go back the next week and study again. That's your job. Research assignment. You've got to research your wives. All right. At any rate, that's the first thing Peter says. You've got to know your wives. You've got to live with them according to knowledge. Then, he says, and this is really getting to what we want, verse 8. He says, to sum up now, he's just been talking about relationships in the home. He's talked about husbands and wives in chapter 3. Before that, he talked about other kinds of relationships. He talked about citizens and the government. He talked about servants and their masters. He even talked about Christ and his submission to the civil and the religious authorities at the end of chapter 2. Well, Peter is bringing all of this to a conclusion, and he says, now to sum up, let all, okay, not just those special relationships, king and citizen, and master and slave, and husband and wife, Christ and the civil authorities, not just those special relationships. He says, all, to sum up, let all be harmonious. Now, that word means of one mind. Let all get along. That's what he's saying. And then he has this next word, which in my version, verse 8, is translated sympathetic. Now, I don't know what your version says. Does it say sympathetic? If you're going to be of one mind, Peter says you've got to be sympathetic. Then two words later, he says you've got to be kind-hearted. Some versions put that compassionate. Now, those are two interesting words, and I want you to think about them just for a moment. The word that's translated kind-hearted is the Greek word ousplagnoi. There are three Greek words that I know, and that is one of them. And the reason I know it is because it's such a great-sounding Greek word, ousplagnoi. Now, don't you just like the feel of that? It's one of those words that sounds like what it means. What does it mean? It means good guts. That's what it means. Okay, splagnoi are guts. Okay, and ou in front of it means good. Okay, so you put the two together, you got good guts. What Paul or Peter is saying is, if you're going to be harmonious, you've got to have good guts towards one another. Now, what in the world does he mean by that? Well, according to the ancient world, emotions are found in your bowels. Okay. Now think about that. That's really where you feel things. You don't feel things in your heart. Okay. We have a Valentine's Day notion in the West that feelings are rooted in the heart. But that's wrong. You don't feel anything in the heart. If you have heart disease, you'll feel something in the heart. But that's not the root of feelings. Okay? If you feel something, where do you feel it? You feel it down here in the gut. If you're really kind of attached to that special person and she walks by and you get that feeling, okay, what's that feeling? It's that sinking feeling. Where do you get it? You get it here. Okay, that's the guts, right? Or if you're nervous and you get all tight and tense, where do you get it? You get it here. Okay, this is where you feel things. Okay, and that's what Peter is saying. You've got to have good feelings towards one another. You've got to have ousplagnoi towards one another. I think there's a whole industry open here in the greeting card business. Instead of Valentine's cards, we'll have splagnoi cards. Okay? And that's biblical. Okay? Valentine cards aren't biblical, but splagnoi cards, those are biblical. Okay? Now, if you're going to get along with one another, you've got to have those kinds of good feelings. But we've got that other word, the first word that comes after let all be harmonious, that word that's translated sympathetic. Well, really, ousplagnoi would be better translated sympathetic. To have sympathy for someone is to feel for that person. If that person is in pain, you feel sorry for that person. If that person's going through a hard time, you feel something for that person. That's sympathy. But the word that Peter is using, which is translated sympathy here, is not sympathy at all. It's the Greek word sympathēs.
interesting. There's a second Greek word I know. May not be or pronounced the right way, but you get the idea. Sun pathes. Well, let's see. You're looking at it this way. Sun pathes. Sympathy. Get it? Okay, we just kind of carry it from Greek into English. Sun pathes. Sympathy. But it's not sympathy, because sun pathes doesn't mean to feel for, it means to feel with. It means to enter in to the other's feeling. It's to enter in to the other's frame of reference. Now that's true understanding. To understand what the other's world is like. Take that word, understanding. Okay, now again, you're looking at it the other way, so it would be understanding, right? And switch them around. To understand is to stand under. Stand under what? Stand under the other's world. Stand under the other's experience. That's what you need. You've got to enter into that other's world. You've got to ask the question, what's it like to be that person? What's it like to experience that? What's it like to go through that? If that happened to me, what would it be like? That's true understanding. Somebody has said, and I forget who, before you withstand, you must stand with. Now we're switching words around here a little bit. But you get the idea. Before you withstand, you must stand with. That means before you disagree with someone, you better stand with that person first and understand his point of view. We might say something more about that later on in these series of meanings, but it disturbs me how easily Christians criticize one another without first standing with. Without first understanding, listen, don't you dare withstand someone. Don't you dare criticize. Don't you dare confront unless you have first stood with that person, unless you have first understood. Well, Peter tells us how important it is for husbands to get along with their wives, and for everyone in the church to be harmonious, to get along. You need understanding. Now, I want to turn you to a different verse, which kind of throws a wrench in the whole works. And this verse is Proverbs chapter 14, verse 10. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 10. The writer of Proverbs says, the heart knows its own bitterness, and a stranger does not share its joy. What's he saying? He's saying, you can't understand the other person. Every heart knows its own bitterness, its own sorrow. No one else can know it. Only the person experiencing it can know it. And a stranger does not share its joy. That means you really can't enter into the joy of another. So we have to understand, but the writer of Proverbs says we are ununderstandable. Now, my wife doesn't understand me. She doesn't. I told you in the last lecture that I'm a New York Giants fan. Well, I'm also a New York Mets fan. And the baseball season is on. And that means for 162 games, I can't go to bed at night until I know the score of that day's game. Which isn't a problem when the Mets are on the East Coast. But when they go out to play in California, it gets a little complicated. Because the games don't start until 10 o'clock. 10:30. Sometimes in L.A. they don't even start until 11 at night. Well, 11:30 will come around, and my wife will say, I'm going to bed, honey, are you going to come?
I'll say, no, I got to wait and get the med score. And she'll say, well, what time will the game be over? Oh, 1:30, 2 o'clock. She just shakes her head, trudges up the stairs. Say, she doesn't understand. Doesn't understand my joy of getting the results of that game. Now, I don't understand my wife's joy. My wife's got this thing about horses. We live on a small farm, and we have, presently, it fluctuates, but presently we have 10 horses. Some of them we board so that we can afford ours. Currently, we have 6 of our own horses. Now, get this, guys. My wife rides, my 2 daughters ride. You can only ride 1 horse at a time. We have 6 horses. That's 3 unnecessary beasts. I don't understand this. Why do we have those extra horses? Because my wife can't say no. Listen, we had horse salesmen long before we had used car salesmen. And I think all the bad things that used car salesmen learn, they learn from horse dealers. You can't trust a one of them. Now, I don't want to offend them. It's probably some horse dealer out there who's going to be offended. But I'm still waiting to meet one I can trust. But at any rate, this one guy, he knows my wife can't say no. And he'll come around from the horse auction, and he'll pull in, and he'll have this whinnying horse in the trailer behind his pickup truck, and I go, oh, no, okay. And my wife says, bug-eyed. It's Mike. He's got a horse. I say, honey, just say no. Just say no. Oh, can I go look at it? Just look at it. Just say no. Just say no. I've got just say no signs all over the house. My wife can't say no. I don't understand that. I don't understand her joy. I have to clean up her joy. But I don't understand her joy. Okay. Now, see what the writer of Proverbs says is true. Every heart knows its own bitterness. And a stranger does not share its joy. Now, what do we do with this? Peter says, it's absolutely essential that you understand one another. You cannot be harmonious. You can't get along together if you do not understand one another. And the writer of Proverbs says, but you can't understand one another. Ultimately, you are ununderstandable. There's the paradox. We have to understand the ununderstandable. How do you get out of that? Let me point you to one other passage. Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4, verses 14 through 16. Since then we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot, now catch this word, who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. There's that word, same word that Peter uses. Sunpathes, it means to feel with, not to feel for. It's not usplagnoi, it's sunpathes, it means to feel with. We do not have a high priest who cannot deal with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore draw near with confidence to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in the time of need. This passage tells us that Jesus, the great high priest, solves the riddle. Jesus bridges the gap between understanding and the ununderstandable, because Jesus has entered into our frame of reference. The incarnation is a gigantic exercise in understanding. He who is above the law put himself under the law. He who has created all things joins with the creation he has made. He has entered into our experience. He is tempted in all points, such as we, because he experiences all of the temptations that we experience. And because he has entered into our experience, because he understands, the writer of Hebrews says he's a faithful high priest who can take all of our needs to the presence of his Father, where he makes intercession for us. And because he is our high priest, we can come with confidence to the throne of grace. You see, Jesus understands. He has entered in to our experience. And when I minister to you, even though I can't understand you fully, because your heart knows its own bitterness and your heart knows its own joy, and I can't enter into that, I minister to you in the name of one who does. I minister to you in the name of Jesus Christ. And he tells me what to do. He tells me to turn the other cheek. He tells me not to return evil for evil, but to return good for evil. He tells me to be gentle and kind and compassionate and patient and long-suffering, and the whole host of things he tells me to do. The one who understands tells me to do those things. I don't have to understand you. I have to minister to you in the name of the one who does. And because he understands, he can drive that home to your heart and meet you exactly where you are. So strive to understand. You must do that. Peter makes that clear. But don't be discouraged because we are ununderstandable. Instead, minister in the name of him, Jesus Christ, who does understand. You see, he does make relationship possible. In his name, begin to understand the ununderstandable.